This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside the one and only Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We got a great 2 hours ahead for you. Appreciate you spending your morning with us. Lots of NFL talk to get into. Some big news, layers of news, I guess we could say, with the New York Jets. We've got some trends for this week's betting action in the NFL. And the one and only Harry Gackman is also going to join us at the end of this hour to get some of his best bets.
Does he have a cartoon, Stormy?
So I'm not sure if we're going to have a cartoon or not today. They have been fired the last couple weeks, Michael.
Yeah, they have been. They've been good. I mean, look, anytime you can get a cartoon after you, you know, you're pretty big time, right? I mean, that's pretty good, right?
I agree. So maybe that's the one thing we're really lacking on the show is, Michael, you need your own cartoon as well.
Well, I had, you know, I got to say this, you know, my man from the Simpsons, the executive producer of the Simpsons is a huge GM Shuffle fan, Matt Selman, tremendous guy. We had him on the podcast talking about leadership.
Very cool.
And he put me in one of those. He put me in one of those. I think I was a character in one of his thing as a favorite podcast. So I actually made an appearance uncredited, by the way, Stormy, uncredited, you know, so but it's all good.
So that's fantastic. So then you have
I used to have it as my avatar for Twitter. I used to have it up there, but they told me to change it. So I did.
That's fantastic. I love it. You're going to have to send me a text of that picture. I want to see it. But let's get things started here, Michael, because yesterday we talked a little bit about the Jets, and we got the news right as we were on air that Trevor Siemian was going to be added to the practice squad for the Jets. And for if you're one of those people out there that said anyone would be better than Zach Wilson, then there you go. You got anyone. But we also heard then yesterday from Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show, ESPN's Rich Cimini giving his perspective on what's going on in the state of the locker room with the New York Jets. So where would you like to start? I feel like there's and Colin Kaepernick, of course, sent a letter to Joe Douglas as well, saying that he would like to be signed to the practice squad. So where would you like to start?
Of course. Well, I think let's start with Siemian. Okay. Let's start with him because in 2016, he was supposed to be the heir apparent in Denver. Remember this, right? Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be the guy that took over for Peyton after Peyton won the injuries, all those things. Started 14 games there. It was 8-6 in the 14 starts, you know, and then after that, it just kind of fell apart his career. Since then, he's had, since those 14 starts he had in 16, he's had 16 starts over the course of his career, 10 coming the next season. So he hasn't been able to have much success as a starter, but at least he's played, right? At least he's played a lot of games. He's in the 2 years that he was essentially a starter, he's thrown the ball for over 200 yards per game, which, you know, you can hate Siemian at 31 years old all you want, but Zach Moore can't throw for two. Zach Wilson doesn't throw for over 200 yards a game. I mean, he doesn't even do that. So at least you have a chance, and at least he can operate, you know, You know, last year he started four games for New Orleans. That wasn't a very pretty sight, but you know, I mean, I think at least he can get you to the game and get you going. I mean, the one thing he didn't do in New Orleans is he had 11 touchdown passes, only 3 interceptions. Mm-hmm. Now, that would be remarkable if Wilson could have done that. So this is an upgrade, and I would suspect the leash is fairly short for Zach Wilson against the Kansas City Chiefs this week. I think it's going to be very quick. I think they'll activate Siemian. Because one thing Siemian does have is that New Orleans experience, right? Mm-hmm. So he knows Hackett's terminology because that is the exact same terminology they use in New Orleans.
And from what I've understood and kind of read about Trevor Siemian over the last 24 hours is that he does pick up on things pretty quickly. So you feel confident from that standpoint. And you even said yesterday, at least he's somebody who can be more accurate and a quick decision maker in terms of him throwing over 200 plus yards. Just to further that point, Zach Wilson's thrown for fewer than 160 yards in 11 games. We know he's had the worst passer rating in the NFL in each of the previous 2 years where he was the regular starter. He's also started this season as the worst passer rating in the NFL. 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions so far. And you look at last game where even in the pocket, all 3 sacks he took, including that safety, were on him. Like there was nothing really that you could blame in those situations except for Zach Wilson. Robert Saleh, we know, has kind of doubled down that feels like he's the guy that gives them the best chance to win right now. He did acknowledge in his press conference this morning that, yes, he needs to be better, and there are things that he's going to do to be better. But the locker room isn't liking a lot of it right now, and we've seen some instances on the field even where guys are yelling at each other. And Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show yesterday, he acknowledged that. Here's what he had to say to his teammates publicly.
We just need to grow up a little bit on offense and lock in and do our jobs, everybody, and not point fingers at each other. And it's everybody, you know. We don't point fingers at the coaching staff. Don't point fingers at each other. Just get back to work and get the job done. You know, it sucks not being there. It's tough. It's really hard.
He added, Michael, that he misses being there. The leadership piece is something that he feels like if he was there, these things wouldn't be happening. And I mean, of course you believe that, right? But he's unfortunately laid up with an Achilles injury in Malibu.
Yeah, and not a bad place to be if you're laid up with an Achilles injury, right, Stormy? I mean, at least you can look at the ocean. I mean, he's got a hell of a compound there, you know, nice crib. Anyway, look, you know, it's good to offer advice from afar like you and I do, but at some point, Saleh, the head coach, has got to handle this, right? And the longer he goes down this Wilson train, the more we're going to see conflicts on the sideline. As much as I've written about and wanted him to stick with Wilson, just his body language, his demeanor, his play really lets you know that after 24 career starts, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
This is not going to work. You know, and so I'd rather Walsh used to say this to us all the time as coaches and as personnel guys. If you know, it's your fault to keep going. If you don't know, keep going. And to me, when I wrote that 3 weeks ago, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe Wilson would grow up and change. But now I know. Now I know. And it's time to move on, because this fallacy of, well, he gives us the best. No, he gives you no chance to win. He gives you no chance to win. There's no evidence out there that he gives you a chance to win in his 24 career starts. OK, so he came back against Pittsburgh. He made a couple plays. You know, I mean, the clock's right twice a day, too. A broken clock's right twice a day, too. So, like, you have to move on. And that's called leadership. OK, we're going to bring somebody in. And now if Joe Douglas is saying to him, no, I don't want to give up, this is why NFL teams lose.
Yeah, I think, and I would hope that just adding Trevor Siemian isn't going to be the last we hear of the quarterback position. Yeah. And I just keep going back to, Michael, the Robert Saleh perspective of it all and the way that he's been so publicly supporting Zach Wilson. Like, I understand that this guy has to start a game for you right now, but that doesn't mean you have to lie to everybody. Like, if this was me and you talking and I was late to the show every single day, I wasn't doing my research, I wasn't watching games, I have a bad attitude, but then our boss comes to you and says she's the best. Like, you know that that's wrong. You know that that's wrong. And I think that's how the locker room feels right now, hearing Robert Saleh say all these things and making these public comments. And ESPN's Rich Cimini kind of followed up that thought. And he said that this, as far as the locker room goes, Saleh knows what Wilson is, but the thing is, he's coming off as a Zach apologist, and that doesn't play well in the locker room. The defense in particular is not happy. This defense knows that if any other player was performing his job the way Wilson is performing his, that player would be benched. Trust me, there's tension in that locker room.
There has to be, because what does the leader do? Well, there's four components of leadership, and one of them is called management of trust, that the people you're leading trust you to be honest. They trust you to be forthright. They trust you to have the ability to treat everyone the same, set the standard, hold everyone to the standard, protect the culture. And so when you're lying in front of them, you lose your leadership skills. You create problems. And every day you do that, if you don't honestly, as a head coach or as executive, if you don't honestly say, when I stand in front of the people that I lead, I have to be honest and I have to tell them the truth. And so it's no surprise that the defense has given up over 130 yards rushing the last 2 weeks. Look, no one's going to play them in an aggressive manner. Now, the Chiefs, obviously, with Mahomes, can do whatever they want to do. But the Chiefs are sitting there saying, look, if we don't turn this ball over, they can't score more than 13 points. So once we get to 24, we're good. Once we get to 20, we're good. I mean, you think New England really was going to take any risk in the set? I mean, Bill punted the ball fourth and inches at the 41-yard line because he knew when he punted it, that the chances of them scoring twice or catching them, they had a 13-3 lead when he did it. I'll punt it back to you. You can't do anything with it. In fact, you'll just eat up more clock than I would. I'm not taking any risk. That's the mentality when you play this team.
So with that, Michael, we've already seen the spread be bet up. Yesterday when we were coming on here, it was a 9-point spread. Today, the Chiefs are favored by 10 at MetLife Stadium, the total at 41.5. If you don't think that the Jets are going to be able to put points on the board, and if they get 20, 25, they're good for the day. How does that make you evaluate the betting side of this game?
Well, I mean, when I ran my numbers this morning, I had this as a 13.8 game.
Okay.
Just based on the numbers. Because here's the other problem. The Jets defense isn't playing great, okay? But the Chiefs defense is. So now you're going against a team that's playing really good defense, probably the best defense that you faced all year. But right? Buffalo's one of the top-ranked defenses in the league. New England's one of the top-ranked defenses in the league, and now you're going against the Chiefs. You're going to have a hard time scoring points on the Chiefs. So let's say this game is – so let's say they get 10 in this game. Do you think the Chiefs score 24? I think there's a pretty good chance they will, based on what I've seen out of the Jets' defense. So I would lean towards taking the Chiefs and not be scared of the points, because my differential says it's 13.8 and the line's what, sitting right at 10 right now, correct?
Yep. It just got pushed over to double digits this morning. Also, in terms of the total, 8 of Zach Wilson's last 9 starts have gone under, and we all know the primetime unders theme, 132, 87, and 4, over 60% the last 5 years. So if you think the Chiefs defense is going to stifle the Jets offense and they're not going to have to do that much to have success, maybe that's a lean as well. We've got to step aside. We'll be back on the Lombardi Line in a moment, getting you some updates on some NFL injuries.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you this football season and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now and save 40% off our football season special when you use the promo code Lombardi. You'll get access to everything we do this football season, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Remember to use that promo code Lombardi. That'll save you 40% when you sign up on a football season special. Today, sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line from coast to coast, as always. Our guy Michael Lombardi out on the East Coast in Ocean City. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. And Michael, we've had a number of injury updates come in this morning. I feel like that's kind of the trend on a Wednesday when we get these head coach press conferences. And as if the Miami Dolphins offense wasn't stout enough this past weekend, it looks like Jalen Waddle will be back available. He's going to practice in full. And if he does that today, we'll clear the concussion protocol.
Yeah, I mean, look, they proved that they can score 70 without him. That's kind of humbling, isn't it? How would you like to be Waddle? Like, I thought you would miss me a little bit, right? You don't even need me. You scored 70 against me. So, yeah, I mean, this will be a different test, obviously, because we know if you're Waddle, we know that Sean McDermott in 3 games against Tyreek Hill has held him to 18 catches for 170 yards, which, based on the way Hill's played in game 1 and game 3, that's usually a first half for him, 170 yards. So, you know, that'll be a little bit of a different game, and they're going to need him. It'll be a different level of defense, too. So I think that's important. I mean, these injuries, like, I don't know where you want to go next, but Baltimore, to me, is one of those where you got to be really careful. I think this line in Cleveland, I mean, it's stayed under 3. It's under 3. But if they're missing that left tackle, you know, if Ronnie Stanley can't go again and they have to put Mauger out there, and then the center can't go again, Lindstrom, then they have to put it the other back. I mean, this is going to be a problem for Baltimore. As great as Lamar can be, those two injuries, if they miss both those guys, I mean, that's going to be devastating. It's going to be similar to what happened to the Rams when we saw their whole system get broken down because they lost Alaric Jackson. You know, when you lose him, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a real problem. When you lose Lindenbaum, that's a problem. When you lose Ronnie Stanley, that's a problem. And you put Patrick Mekhart in there at left tackle, they were going by him like a turntile.
Yeah, that whole game for the Rams changed in the third quarter when he went out. And now you look at this Ravens-Browns game, and especially given how successful the Browns defense has been and how good they have looked, I'd certainly be worried if I was that spot, being Baltimore, especially coming off the most recent loss that you had and knowing this is an important division game. Another one, we'll keep it going. We got some quarterbacks to update you on recently. Today, Bryce Young is going to practice as well. He obviously missed last week. Andy Dalton started while Bryce Young was dealing with the ankle injury, but he's practicing today. Frank Reich saying this morning he seems to be doing well after they worked him out initially yesterday. And Anthony Richardson, he's back practicing today as well from the concussion protocol. Not so much for Jimmy Garoppolo. Josh McDaniels would not confirm who would be starting. Didn't say Brian Hoyer would be it, but we know Aiden O'Connell was kind of like the darling of the preseason. So any thoughts on those quarterback updates?
Well, I think if the guy's not practicing Wednesday, then, you know, I think what makes the most sense for the Raiders would be to play O'Connell the way he played. I mean, the team saw him play this summer. They were behind him. And, you know, if he's going to need all the reps, Hoyer can stay within the job he has. He doesn't require a lot of reps to run the game plan because he knows the offense. So, to me, I don't think it's – I think on a quick change, this is where when you have time to figure out who's going to be the starter – You basically can prepare the player. When you don't have time, if you get an injury in the game, Hoyer may be the best player to put in during a game. But if you have time, O'Connell should be the best player. He's proven that over the summer. He deserves it. I think he would lift their team up. I think the other injury that you didn't mention in terms of quarterback relating is the Saints signed Jake Luton off of the practice squad off of the Panthers, which now tells me they need somebody there. Right. And so that means Carr probably isn't going to play, because when you're signing a practice squad player off another team, you're basically saying that, you know, you got to have an injury here and you need to address that injury. So I think that's also in the betting market, you know. Yep. So we could see, you know, Jameis Winston, and now Luton's on the team with Carr being out. But Stormy, they get Alvin Kamara back. So yep. He's back for this game.
Officially reinstated after serving that 3-game suspension. So that'll be a big boost to that offense, especially missing Derek Carr. When he went down, you think about the lead that they had against Green Bay and watch that dissipate before your eyes. With Carr, what's your understanding of this AC joint sprain? Is it more of a pain tolerance type of an injury, or is it more significant?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, if he can't drive the ball and it's his shoulder injury, it's on the shoulder that he throws. If it wasn't on the shoulder that he's not throwing the ball with, it becomes just a pain tolerance thing. If it's the right shoulder, then it becomes, can I drive the football? Can I throw it? Is it affect me throwing? Am I going to re-injure it further? Am I going to do something to it? You know, for me, I think they're better off playing Winston. I think that's why they signed Luton, to bring him in there. He'll be the backup. You know, it's not an ideal situation, especially against when you're coming with Todd Bowles, who's going to blitz and attack you as like they do. I mean, remember, you know, New Orleans and this Buck team, they've had some great games back and forth. And the Bucks really gave Brady a lot of trouble, if you remember right. I mean, the Bucks used to blitz them and create – they used to go in there and beat them. You know, so this would be a tough game, I think, if you're Carr and you know that you're going to get a lot of pressure from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers like they typically do. It would be a game you might re-injure it again.
So this is also the last week before Jonathan Taylor would be eligible to return from PUP. Mm-hmm. Apparently, according to a report from ESPN's Dan Graziano, he still doesn't want to play for the Colts, and the Colts, quote, still don't want to give him a long-term contract. So we remember Taylor, of course, requested the trade back in July, was given the opportunity to find a trade partner, but when nothing was coming to fruition, ends up getting put on the physically unable to perform list with that ankle, missing the first 4 weeks. Shane Steichen still won't answer any questions in regard to Jonathan Taylor until he's fully cleared. But how do you feel? Like, does he stay? Does he go? We were just talking about the Browns with Nick Chubb's injury. Is that a spot that might make sense before the October 31st deadline? How are you looking at this situation?
Well, I think if you're Chris Ballard, you know that there's two, you've got an asset, okay? And if I trade him now for anything less than a compensatory third round pick, I could get that if I just let him become a free agent. If I franchise him and I've got a ton of cap room next year, then I could control where he gets traded to, and somebody's going to have to give me more than a compensatory third. So I have two options that I control with the player. And neither of them said I should give him away. Neither of them say that. So why would I give him away? Why would I make the Browns happy? Now, if the Browns come to me and give me a deal that's equivalent to a first-round pick, we'll trade you a two this year and a two next year, you know, whatever that is, then you have to think about it. But based on what I was told, nobody really came with a significant offer, especially for a guy whose agent's claiming he should make $17 million a year. If you make $17 million a year, you know, you should get bring something back in value. It's like when people say, well, the Cowboys are not going to miss Diggs. Yeah, they are. They just paid him a ton of money. They wouldn't have paid him if they didn't think they were going to miss him, right? They just paid him a ton of money. Of course, that's going to affect the Cowboys' secondary. You know, if you're going to trade away a great player, why would I take a fourth-round pick when I know the system is going to allow me to at least get certain things within it? I think a lot of times we start rumors with people that don't know the rules.
And meanwhile, Michael, as far as on-field performance goes, I think there was a collective like, wow, we really need Jonathan Taylor week one when you saw the, 16 carries for just however many yards. It was a really bad rushing day that opening weekend. But since then, and Zach Moss returning from the broken forearm, he's performed at a really high level, averaging 105 yards the last two games, scored a touchdown. Like, he's looked really, really solid in that offense.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that's what they need. I mean, look, why would they panic? Why are you going to panic? You already played four games without him. You won two of the four. Now you get your quarterback back. Now with your quarterback back with Zach Moss, now you might have a chance. The offensive line's playing much better than it did last year. And, you know, look, they went into Baltimore. Yes, it was Baltimore's missing a ton of players, but they found a way to win that game.
And that was still without Anthony Richardson, who I think has been probably ahead of schedule from what we predicted Anthony Richardson would look like to start the year. He's got four touchdowns in five quarters that he's been out there. So I think that they're probably happy that they'll be able to get him back out of the protocol this week. But very interesting situation to keep tabs on in Indy. Again, this week against the Rams, the last game that he should be on that PUP list. We've got to step aside here on the Lombardi line. But Michael, I have compiled a number of against the spread trends as it pertains to this week in the NFL. So when we come back, I'm going to hit you with, is the trend your friend? Get your thoughts on those in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out our current betting splits data. If you want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game, the betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just action for today, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN is here to make you a more informed bettor year-round. You can check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. And here on the Lombardi line, it's time for an update on Lombardi's list. We're going to go through Michael's top five and bottom five teams in his updated power rankings based exclusively on the numbers, Michael. And so we just finished a conversation about the Jets. We talked a little bit about the Carolina Panthers as well. Feels natural to start from the bottom here with your bottom five teams who you have updated as the Bears as the bottom of the barrel, followed by Carolina, the Broncos, the Jets, and Texans. Take us through it.
Well, I mean, when I write up my numbers, everything is predicated on what I believe are the key indicators that go towards winning. And we can only go to 32 because that's all the categories, that's all the teams there are. And so some teams, you know, are less. That's why when the point spreads get really wider, it's difficult for me to handicap because they only go as low. But Chicago is by far, I mean, the next closest team to Chicago when you look at that, the Panthers, there is a there's almost a 50-point differential, which is really rare. I mean, they're bad in almost every single category. It's really shocking when you do it, when you go through it and you look at all the things that matter, whether it's sack percentage, whether it's red zone attempts, because red zone production, it really doesn't tell you anything, because if you don't get down there, what is that? That means you're not moving the football, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to get there to be able to have an attempt. So go through all that. And then obviously the Texans moved up, but their defense still is not quite where it needs to be in terms of numerical grades. The Broncos moved way down. The Jets moved way down because when their numbers just come in, they're offensively, the Broncos are understandable. When you give up 700 points, your numbers are going to gyrate in a
700,
completely bad direction.
700.
700 yards, I meant. I'm sorry. Yeah, not 700 good. Points. 70 points, 700 yards. They had the sevens down cold.
Yep.
And then, you know, like I said, the Texans have improved. They're up to 28. So I think the list is there is a difference between 32 to 28, and there isn't that much of a difference between 28 and 27. So, which is good news, right? That's the good news if you're the Texans. You're slowly moving your way back up the ladder.
And the Giants were a team, meanwhile, that moves out of your bottom five despite an 18-point loss in San Francisco, where they were outgained in total yards 441 to 150. So I think that says a lot to me that they somehow improved on your list despite that type of a loss. And the Texans, who won their game, are moving up, but not enough to be better than the Giants. I wonder what was kind of the distinguisher between those two teams.
Well, the difference between the Giants and New York, Houston and the Giants are 1 point.
Okay, so right there, there.
I could have easily put the Giants, you know, but yep. when I sort it out, it comes out, you know, I let the Excel spreadsheet sort it. I don't play around with it and let it come out that way, which then allows me, because that line, it then allows me to see the line as it relates to who they're playing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some of these lines are really tight, and some of them there's a little bit of a margin based on the point spread.
So for you, when you look at this Bears-Broncos game coming up this week, both teams 0-3 straight mm-hmm. up and against the number playing each other, but the Broncos are a road favorite out there at Soldier Field. These are two teams that are your bottom three in the entire National Football League. Does that make it a stay away for you, or do you feel like it is truly advantage Broncos?
Well, I have the Broncos should be a 5.3-point favorite based on even what they're bad as their numbers are.
Wow.
And the line's 3. So now in my number, I don't equate for home field. I think it's already built into the layer. Mm-hmm. So if you took away 2 points for Soldier Field, then my number would match up to the number that's on the board. But I don't think that's really relevant. I think there'll be more boos in Chicago than there will be loud cheers. But look, I mean, Denver's embarrassed. Denver can move the football. I mean, Denver did move the ball. They just, I never saw an effort like that on defense. In fact, I had one GM, we were talking today about it. Like, I've never seen that kind of horrible play by a team that lasted 60 minutes as well, like it did. I mean, it's embarrassing to everybody in the organization. I mean, they can't really relate to it. They can't handle this. I mean, it's just too bad. They got to come out and play a lot better.
Yeah, the defense was abysmal. I can't imagine being one of those guys on the flight back all the way from Miami to Denver. That's a long road, and it must have been an ugly, uncomfortable flight.
I mean, if that would have been with me and the Raiders, I don't know if anybody would have been allowed on that flight except for Mr. Davis and his family. I think that would have been able to let everybody there.
Get your own way home.
That would have been a bad one. Ooh, man.
Yeah. I believe it. Okay,
Southwest Airlines. Here you go. Buy your own ticket.
So bad. Pick your own seat. Stuck in a middle seat. 300-pound offensive lineman. It was that kind of day. Let's go from worst to best here in your top five in the National Football League, because I do think this is an interesting conversation topic. You still have the Dallas Cowboys ranked as your top team at this point for the third straight week, despite being upset by the Arizona Cardinals. Kansas City is up from 4-2 after obviously embarrassing the Bears that they did this past weekend. Bills up from 4. San Francisco, despite another win and being one of the three remaining undefeated teams, gets bumped down to 4. And Miami has cracked the top 5 for the first time this season in your rankings, but only number 5, despite putting up 70 points.
Well, look, my numbers are not based on who won last week. You know, that's where everybody else does their power rankings. And if you like that, that's where you're going to get a mistake in the betting world. Because if you're reacting to a win, you know, and you move a team up, what was the win? How did they win? How did they play? The difference between Dallas and San Francisco on my rankings are 12 points. 12 points.
Really?
So, you could have made San Francisco one. You know, if I would have just said, okay, based on last week, who should I make one? I'll make San Francisco one. I'll make Kansas City two. I'll make Buffalo three, and I'll make Dallas four. I just went with the numbers. I just put them out the numbers. I don't care who ridicules it. They're not the best team in football. They lost to Arizona. Their numbers say they're good. And they're slightly ahead of the San Francisco 49ers, who are in fourth place, and they're only 12 points behind them. So if they played against one another, the line would be pretty much what the line would be. It'd probably be a 2-point line in one direction, depending on where they played. Miami's a little bit outside of this. Cleveland's a little bit outside of this. Baltimore. You say, well, where's Philly? Where's Philly? Philly's numbers have not been good. Even though they're 3-0, Nick Sirianni's admitted their head coach, they haven't played their best football. Mm-hmm. And that shows up in the numbers. And these numbers are not about, well, you know, they're blowing people out, so people are getting junkyards. No, no, no. That's not what the numbers tell you. So, you know, this is why you have to objectively come up with your own numbers and not base it off of win-loss record and what the perception is out there in the media. Because the media every week are going to change. I mean, one week Colorado's going to beat Oregon by 20. The next week they're going to lose. You know, it's like you can't go by that. You have to take subjectivity out of it.
And to your point about Dallas still being ranked number one, we talked about it yesterday about how maybe that was kind of the punch in the mouth wake up call that a team like that needs. They had a lot of penalties. They struggled in the red zone. A lot of things that you didn't expect to see from a Dallas Cowboys team that maybe has to do with overlooking an opponent like Arizona because of the way that team has talked about. So I think that's telling that they're still number one.
I just got a wow here. Caesar just put it in here. We have a big announcement.
We do?
Damon Lillard traded to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Wow. Wow.
Just saw it. I mean, that's got to steal the thunder, right? I mean, I know we only have a minute and a half left to go, but I don't know what. We have to figure out who he got traded for. But there was some talk. There was a lot of uncertainty about whether Giannis was going to be able to re-up and stay there. Obviously, this trade is reflective of that. So much for James Harden getting traded for Lillard. Yeah, they laughed at that.
Wow. Yes. So
You better get your Bucks money in. If you want to bet the Bucks now, you better get it in. That number's going to shoot way down with Lillard. I don't know what they gave up. So I'm talking without really knowing the full details. We'll see it on Twitter here. But they were never mentioned in the conversation, were they?
No. And I'm slow to pulling up my odds boards right now, but the Bucks I see plus 475 atop the odds board right now to win the NBA championship. So I don't know. I haven't been keeping an eye on NBA odds boards this offseason.
It was part of a three. Yeah, here's what it's a three-team deal with Drew Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, and Kamara, and an unprotected Milwaukee first rounder, an unprotected Milwaukee swaps of 28 and 20 and 30 to the Blazers. Phoenix gets Yusuf Nurkic back, Grayson Allen, Nesar Little, and Keon Johnson.
Okay, so Portland trading Damian Lillard to the Milwaukee Bucks, part of a three-team trade. They're a plus 475 favorite to win an NBA championship. Sad day for the Miami Heat, who certainly were eyeing to get Dame in their pocket. We'll react to this a little bit more when we come back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line.